In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball. Let's all
go to the lobby. Yes, indeed, it is time to discuss movies and more with Alan Adams of The Main Edge. It's Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. I'll be headed there tonight. Got a sitter. My wife and I are going. It's her choice, so I think you know what we're going to see.
Oh, yeah. It's about time. You guys will have fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys will have a good time.
A little Downton Abbey for us tonight. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good.
How did Friday night go?
It was a good show. The turnout was a little lighter than you might like, but I spoke to Stacey Coventry over there at the Bangor Humane Society. She was saying it's been like that for everything. Mm. Like, it's not just like literally across the board, participation engagement has been down. But you know, the event on Saturday went off without a hitch. It was a beautiful day, 500 people, 200 dogs. Like, it was just a delight. They wound up raising over $50,000, for the Bangor Humane Society. You know, we did our small part, to be a part of that. And Sheridan and I took Stella down and, had a lovely time. At one point there was a pen full of puppies that, almost, resulted in us having to do some serious, household shifts.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
Oh, it's just like, and then, you know, you're just like, oh, look, it's puppies. And then one will like reach up and like give you a look or like lick your finger. You're just like, okay, well now you have to come home with me. Like, this is how this works now. Like, we are forever connected and you will go home with me. A lot of that stuff. And then yesterday I did some yard work, did some work. But all things considered, I had a pretty solid weekend.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. How about you?
It was good. An uneventful trip to Philadelphia, which
that's fun.
Was always
nice,
good.
Nice change.
Not the result we wanted for the Black Bears, but overall a good trip.
And yeah, no, that's nice. Well, and that, there's no shame in losing to a team like that Villanova squad.
No, number five in the country. And now we're home for 2 weeks, and I like that.
That'll be nice.
Yeah. And going to the movies. So,
fantastic.
How many did you get to see this weekend?
Well, there was only one wide release in theaters, but I did tack on a Netflix original into the mix. So, which would you like to talk about first?
Well, let's go with Netflix.
Okay, sure. It's a movie called In the Shadow of the Moon.
Oh, yes.
And it was Netflix has been doing a much better job of sort of promoting certain of their film offerings. They've always been solid as far as like the original series, but I feel like their original movies don't necessarily get the same sort of push. But I had heard about this one some time ago. It's basically like a time thriller, a time travel crime thriller kind of situation, where a Philadelphia police officer, played by Boyd Holbrook, he's just starting out. He's got a pregnant wife. His brother-in-law, played by Michael C. Hall, is a lieutenant, so he's basically his superior in the police department. The year's 1988, and there's a series of bizarre murders that wind up in a fairly gruesome end for a series of seemingly unconnected people. The guy tracks down the supposed culprit. A young woman sporting a hoodie, and she says some cryptic things that indicate that she knows a good deal about him, and then she gets hit by a train.
Oh.
He struggles to deal with that and all that. So from there, we flash forward 9 years to 1997. He's made detective. But the aftermath of that case has sort of followed him because there are a lot of people who have questions about how it actually played out, and the body was never identified, and so they there are protests in the streets wondering what happened, who was she, all this stuff, and then the same sorts of deaths start happening again, and they're looking at like surveillance footage, and it's the same person. Mm-hmm. It's the same woman who has committed these crimes. And so he goes and tries to track her down. And this is when it becomes clear to him that this woman is not all that she seems. She is, in fact, from the future.
Nope. Whoa.
And vanishes again. And as you might expect, the subsequent years get a little weird for our detective friend. Because now that he knows what her deal is but can't prove it, like he kind of goes crazy town a little bit. You know, winds up like all the wild beard and living in his car and all this stuff. Like his familial relationships have all crumbled. You know, Michael C. Hall keeps getting promoted. Like he winds up as the chief of police and all this stuff. But he starts obsessing over sort of connecting the dots and trying to figure out what this person wants, why she's doing what she's doing, and understanding how it's happening. And there are a couple of throwaway things. Like at one point, a random physicist shows up at the police station and conveniently is like, you know, my research says that every 9 years there's a bridge between dimensions that happens when the moon is close. Like, just, I don't know. It's that kind of movie where there's just these random sort of exposition dumps where it's like, oh, okay, they need to explain something to me. And it goes on from there. I'm not gonna spoil the ending and as we go forward, but it's time travel's tough. Like you gotta commit to one of two sort of directions, and both have their pitfalls. You've got the sort of many worlds kind of attitude where it's like every change causes a new completely separate sort of, you know, timeline to sort of branch out. Or then you've got the sort of tree trunk hypothesis where you're sort of back to the future, where it's like it's all one timeline, but you're still altering how like it's not like parallel universes. You're just changing the one universe as opposed to that.
Right.
And this movie kind of never really fully commits to either sort of sensibility. And so that makes it tough. A lot of the more complicated stuff is either ignored or just sort of hand waved away, which is tough. The performances are pretty solid, although I will say Michael C. Hall as a Philadelphian police officer occasionally has a Southern accent. And I say occasionally because it's in and out, which is not what you want.
No.
And some of the sequences are really wonderfully constructed. And then you have other sequences where it looks like the effects were rendered, you know, 12 years ago. Like it's a bit of a mishmash, and it's too bad because like I love a good thriller, I love a good time travel story, and the idea of putting the two together, like when it works, it's great, like it's legitimately great. But when the filmmaker wants to focus more on sort of doesn't want to get bogged down with the logistics of things, things get a little messy, and that messiness is kind of hard to overlook in a movie like this. That said, I mean, it wasn't a terrible experience. I'm certainly happy that I watched it. I'm glad I didn't shell out money at the movie theater to see it, I guess. And then, you know, I don't mean to damn it with faint praise, but yeah, that's about where we're at with In the Shadow of the Moon.
All right. And then the other film generating a lot of buzz.
I saw Abominable.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. I was thinking it was Joker. Is that next week?
That's next weekend.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. No, I saw Abominable, which is...
I like the trailer for it. It looked cute.
You know, and you got a feel for DreamWorks because they're always going to be playing second fiddle to the Pixar, Disney sort of megalith. But they do fun stuff. Yeah. And the joy of them is, they don't have to take themselves quite so seriously as the Pixars and Disneys of the world. And so there's a little bit more goofiness, a little looseness that comes with DreamWorks movies that you don't necessarily get with the admittedly excellent work that Pixar and Disney do and all that sort of thing. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a young girl living in Shanghai with her mother and her grandmother. They're still mourning the loss of her father. She's a bit of a loner. She's working all these sort of part-time jobs to save money so that she can go on the big trip that she and her dad planned before he passed away. And all that gets thrown into disarray when she goes up on her rooftop one day and discovers a Yeti. The Yeti, which has escaped from a research facility operated by a zoologist named Dr. Zara, voiced by Sarah Paulson, and financed by a businessman by the name of Burnish, voiced by Eddie Izzard. Basically, Burnish's goal is to reveal the existence of Yetis to the world because in his younger days as an explorer, he saw a Yeti and told people about it, and they laughed at him. Oh, Rich. They laughed at him.
Wow.
And so he was going to have his revenge by, his plan wasn't necessarily clear. It's like, well, you have a Yeti. Why don't you just show it to people? And then problem solved. But there were apparently other things that needed to happen in the interim. But anyway, the Yeti escapes, winds up on Yi's rooftop. Through really a rather impressive pickup of communication between the species, she determines that he needs to go home. And home is the Himalayas, thanks to a conveniently placed billboard that allows him to illustrate where he is from. So she's like, okay, I'm gonna help him get back. She names him Everest, and she's like, I'm going to help you get back to your home. Meanwhile, a couple of other kids in the building, there's a dorky little basketball-obsessed kid named Peng, and his older cousin who looks out for him, who's a sort of hotshot, like social media obsessed kid named Jin, played by, and this is awesome, you're going to think this is awesome, played by the grandson of Tenzing Norgay.
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that neat?
Wow.
Yeah, his Tenzing.
Edmund Hillary's Sherpa guide.
That's right. He's named after his grandfather. His name is Tenzing Norgay Trainer.
Wow.
Like, and so it was just like,
that's awesome.
Like, I saw that in the credits, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That is fantastic. So these three kids wind up with this Yeti, and they're going to make their way across China and get to the Himalayas to return him to his home. But Burnish and Dr. Zara and the various security forces of Burnish Enterprises have other ideas. And so they're going to, all personnel and, you know, drones and guns and tasers and all that stuff brought out in full force to return the Yeti to Burnish's possession. Turns out Yeti's magic. That shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. Assume that Yetis are magic. But there's also magic in friendship.
Yes.
You know, and it's just like, it's a wonderful, here's the thing. I'm always going to be a sucker for stories about kids helping magical creatures. Like, that's just, like, that's in my DNA. Like, right from E.T. on, man. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, little, like, strange otherworldly creatures with magic powers that need help from kids. Yeah, no, sign me up. It's super sweet. Like, it's great to look at. Like, it's really beautifully done. The voice acting is really strong. Not a ton of story, really. Like, it's your basic, like, sort of hero's journey kind of thing, where it's just like each sort of like stop along the way is an excuse for a set piece of some sort of, you know, big execution of magical powers or whatever, or teamwork or what have you. But it's really sweet. We talk about this a lot, and, you know, I'm all for the artistic merit of animated films. I'm all for the emotional investment that can come with animated films. Sometimes a kid's movie can just be a kid's movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's okay to toss a couple of jokes towards the grown-ups every now and then, but you don't have to. Like, it's and this is one of those movies. Like, there are a couple of feints that are like, oh yeah, this is maybe aimed at the slightly older crowd. But for the most part, it's for kids. And as such, I think it's a relatively successful offering. Like, we Sheridan and I had a really good time. You know, it's not a movie that you're going to necessarily feel the need to revisit, but as in terms of ways to while away, you know, 90 minutes or so, I'll tell you what, you can do a lot worse.
Oh, that's for sure. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talks movies with us every Monday. If you want to go back and listen to any of Alan's earlier reviews, check them out. Just click on the movie reviews tab on the website at downtownwithrichkimble.com.